The book reading. Please note the views expressed in this book are not that of the station. Listener's discretion is advised. SFM presents another episode of Why Men Hate Women, written by Kopano Ratile.
Chapter 13. Producing and embodying the loving images we want of ourselves. A while back, I saw a video of four Kenyan men, young-looking, addressing themselves to the Western world about the stereotypes of African men in Hollywood movies. The video was posted in 2012. It has now been viewed more than 1.6 million times on YouTube. I'm one of those viewers watching it more than once because it provoked something in me. The video begins with each of the men declaring, "I'm an African man." One stereotype they seek to challenge is of African men as obsessed with violence. The stereotypical representation of African men are something I know not only from YouTube videos, television, movies, print media, pornography and books, but as lived experience with which I grew up. The very ways I breathe, walk, have sex, speak, get spoken to, dress, love, and am loved have been marked by colonial prejudices about what I am and what I can be. The contents of my mind are still soaked in racist beliefs. It is only through struggle, at once psychological and social, creative and institutional, that we might be able to rid ourselves of such beliefs and free ourselves from prejudice. The time when I, like all men similar to me, will feel completely secure, free from the blinding white gaze, is still in the future. But it is a future that won't materialize out of the blue. We have to want it and work for it. And this does not mean we have to stop practicing a capacious kind of love. I could even say boot and freedom in our lives today. While some things around us may not change as swiftly as we would like them to, the possibilities of a life where we feel we deserve unconditional positive regard and of shifts in the wider world are always present. Years after the formal end of apartheid, I'm still making my way toward I. For like all men of my shade, I continue to be part of them, not yet entirely an individual. I remain unknown and unpredictable to some people when they encounter me. I can't be really known or fully trusted, even though I'm the shadow tending the garden, the figure standing guard at the gate in a uniform, a speaker of parliament, a CEO of a major corporation, a father, lover, global football star. As is true for those men in the video and for millions of other men like me, being a stereotype remains a fact of my life that is hard to shake off. When I get followed in department stores, when white women hold more tightly on their bags as I pass, when I hear car doors go click as I jog past, when I'm thought incapable of looking after my child on my own. Under these conditions, reimagining yourself as fully human, capable, hardworking, loving, caring, intelligent, knowledgeable, creative, joyful and all you can dream of is nothing short of life-saving. But as I said, I found that the Kenyan man's video provoked something in me, in the sense of being both generative and annoying. The positive aspect of the video was that it centered African voices and sought to undo stereotypes about men. That is undeniably important for anyone who believes in Africa and its men, women, and children. However, there are some negative aspects to this video. The main one is that it is not really addressed to African people. Its primary audience is the Western world, specifically a white audience in the United States, a fact evident in the description introduced in the video. This audience is the one called on to stop the pity by the organization that made the video Mama Hope as part of its Stop the Pity, Unlock the Potential campaign. The simple message is that Even though there are organizations and individuals that help in working to change men in Africa and how these men are viewed in the United States and other parts of the West, it is really men in Africa who must themselves create many more and many different images in videos, films, photography, fine art, books, news reports, and through research. They must make the images of love, of sustaining relationships, and of the kind of caring world they imagine. The more diverse and favorable the images, the better, for that is how stereotypes are undone and new subjectivities and relations can be made. It is true that social media and the wide availability of smartphones have made it possible to stage, produce, and circulate images of heterosexual men, trans men, and other queer men like never before in history. Every image of a man that refuses typecasting does the work of contesting the image of African masculinity as not only coming in just one model, but also naturally violent. Hence, African men need more representation that lay the groundwork for diverse patterns of masculinity to emerge, out of which a more caring version can materialize. It is, however, not enough for Africans to just imagine themselves. Image must be made flesh. They must, that is, make and embody the images of love, of sustaining relationships, and of the kind of world they need. That is always the harder project. Chapter 14. If women stopped caring for men. Now and then I have imagined what would happen if women in this country were to stop caring for men. If for 1 month they said, "We don't care." What would happen if they said, "Take care of yourselves, your dogs, your houses, your sexual needs, your offices, your hospitals, your children, all your needs that you have burdened us with for so long." Can you imagine that? If they were to care only for each other, not for us or for white men and not for white women, how would we react? I think at first there would be laughter. Bafflement would follow. If they still did not come back to their caring roles, anger would come next, and then bribery. And we would be furious. How can they? Who do they think they are? But then we would surely make promises of a better pay. Maybe for those who love us, promises of a more practical love. And then after trying to invent robots to have sex with, make tea, and take care of our other needs, we would resort to the old forms of torture. It is no secret that we treat those who take care of us badly precisely because we know in our nightmares that showing how much we depend on them would reveal how much we owe them. We must make them believe that their labor is worth very little. We must never let them fully grasp that their loving care is the only thing between here and hell. Part 2. Violence. Chapter 15. I'm more scared of them. I'm more scared of them. This is what Adande Chokolwana says in a video hashtag I Rise and Speak Out, made by the MultiChoice Group for the Uyinene Mkhwetjana Foundation in 2020. In August 2019, Uyinene's life was cut short by a post office worker, Luyanda Botha, at the Clarence Post Office in Cape Town. The 19-year-old University of Cape Town student had gone to fetch a parcel at the post office. In a country that daily experiences gruesome attacks on women by men, Uyi's murder captured the headlines in a way only a few incidents of violence had done before. A university student at the top university who goes to a post office to fetch a parcel and ends up dead in the post office will generate fear in many women at universities, in women anywhere. I can die a violent death at the post office on an ordinary day. I can die going about my routine daily business. That's what a person may feel. While it remains a hypothesis why the killing of Uyi galvanized the righteous rage of thousands of women and tipped over into public protest against men's violence against women, Adande Chokolwana's words touch on the daily emotion that not only she lives with, but many other women too. Fear. I am more scared of them. Them are men, of course. Men have become phobogenic objects. Women are scared of men. A woman's fear of being violated by men means they cannot love freely. It is the well-composed man women think they know, behind the counter, at work, as much as the stranger at the deserted train station, in a parking lot, who poses a risk to them. A society in which women are scared of men is not just a terrifying and maddening place for women. It also throws up questions about whether we can love when we are afraid of being close to those among whom love may be found, about the reduced likelihood of friendship between genders, the absence of playfulness, love under threat. How does an individual find or nurture love in a society where fear is pervasive? Can a scared person genuinely and willingly care for another? It does not sound possible, for fear does not care. Scared people do not care. What they want is to stop being scared. Only then can they start to care about matters other than being frightened. It seems to me that love coming from a fearful person is love under duress, obligated intimacy, care that is coercively extracted. The best care you expect from obligated care, which includes paid for love, is care as duty. That is why they teach front desk workers at airports to smile, why they teach receptionists at hotels to appear welcoming, why they teach assistants at clothing shops to ask in a happy tone if they can help you with anything. They are paid to take care of customers. That is what is called emotional labor, a key task in neoliberal capitalist service industries. Service industry care workers and other low-paid and precarious care workers live with the insecurity that they will lose their jobs, not receive their bonuses, or be disciplined if they show what they really feel, which could be tiredness, anxiety, or anger about something that happened to them the day before. They have to lock that away. As customers, we also do not care about their emotions except to be served with positive attitude. Like the badly paid, precariously employed and job insecure care workers, day laborers, hotel cleaners, restaurant waiters, academics on short-term contracts, and domestic workers who live with job insecurity, women in a violent society live with physical and emotional insecurity. They are scared of being attacked, robbed, punched by their partners, harassed in the streets, flashed, coerced, hijacked, raped, or murdered. Their lives are marked by fear, sometimes vividly close up, sometimes under the surface and unconscious, but constantly in the news and always in the air. When women are scared of men in their workplaces, it affects their well-being, of course. And that has repercussions also for the productivity and well-being of the organization as a whole. When the women are scared of the men of the same race as them, the race is sundered by fear. We cannot take care of one another. We cannot be free with one another. Blackness is supposed to indicate solidarity, I'm told, which is to say a kind of affective and practical bond. I believed it. What I did not reckon with was that solidarity is love in practice, making affection visible. You have to do it again and again. Do it until the fear dissipates. When the presence of men in a place, a taxi, train, club, street, generates fear in a woman, her breathing is constricted. But when women fear me as a man, my world is also impoverished and darkened in profound ways. I cannot play with them. They cannot be free with me. This is important enough to underline. The realization that women are scared of men has brought forth the insight that they cannot be playful around and with men.
That was another episode of Why Men Hate Women and Other Reflections on Love, Violence and Masculinity, read by Samson Khumalo. The book is published by Wits University Press and is also available online. www.vetspress.co.za. It is broadcast on SAFM at 11:45 Monday to Thursday on The Talking Point. It is produced for SAFM by Jeffrey Matenji. Technical production by Wiseman Manqele.